This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The sad truth in American education is that there is an achievement gap between students from different socioeconomic backgrounds. It shows up consistently when you look at standardized test scores, grade point averages, dropout rates, and college enrollment and completion rates. This achievement gap starts early in a child's educational experience, and if not adequately addressed, snowballs, leading to the problems I just mentioned. There have been a number of programs developed to address this gap, which have met with various levels of success. In North Carolina, the latest is the Read to Achieve legislation, part of the Excellent Public Schools Act. It became law last July and goes into effect with the school year that is about to start. Under the law, third graders who don't read at grade level will be held back. They have the option of going to a summer reading camp to improve, but if they're still behind, they'll be held back. It sounds sensible to many, but there's a lot of controversy surrounding this new policy, with opponents predicting those who are held back will be more likely to drop out. As we quickly approach the implementation of this new policy, WFAE has partnered with the YMCA of Greater Charlotte, MECED, and Teach for America for a special edition of Charlotte Talks from Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. We have an audience of folks eager to discuss this and a few other educational issues with leaders from four of this region's school systems, and we're going to meet them now. Dr. Heath Morrison is superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Dr. Laurie Morrow is deputy superintendent of Gaston County Schools. Dr. Sherry Hoyle is superintendent of Lincoln County Schools. And Dr. Crystal Hill is executive director of elementary education for Mooresville Graded Schools. And we thank you all for being with us today. As we said, this Read to Achieve mandate that children who aren't reading at grade level at the end of third grade are going to be held back. Last year, 31% of kids in each of in North Carolina, 31% of kids in North Carolina did not read at grade level. How big a problem is this in your various school systems? Laurie Morrow from Gaston County, I'll begin with you.
In our school system, last year we retained 3% of our third grade students. We were proud to say that that was down 2% from the year before. So we feel like we're making progress, but there certainly still is room for improvement.
Sherry Hoyle from Lincoln County.
Our data reflects similar to Gaston County's. We had 3%, a little over, and we were down by 1%. So we're going, we feel, at least in the right direction, but as you mentioned, we are definitely looking for areas for improvement.
Crystal Hill from Mooresville.
In Mooresville Graded School District, we retain less than 1% of our third graders.
And Keith Morrison from CMS.
Well, I think the question isn't how many you retain, it's how do they do on the end of course assessment. And in Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, our students mirror very much the state average, so about 70% pass, so that means about 30% are going to need some sort of remediation support so that we can move them on into fourth grade.
Why aren't children reading at grade level? And heretofore, what has happened to those who were not by the time they got to the end of the third grade? Anybody can answer that question. Well, nobody wants to answer that. Go ahead, Heath.
So I think we saw a very compelling video for your listening audience right before the show started about how the gaps start even before students enter into school. And there are numerous studies that show research that the primary indicator is that a student is going to be able to walk across stage and graduate in 12th grade before they ever start into any kind of school rest with the educational attainment of the parent, the economic status of the child, and then also access to early childhood programming. And so if your parents graduated, if you're not in poverty and you had access to quality early childhood programming, chances are you're going to be reading at grade level through or above throughout your schooling, and you're going to graduate on time. If any of those components are missing, you're automatically at risk. And so what we have to make sure is that when kids come already at risk, when kids who come to school starting on day one are already behind, we can't give kids who come to school with less at school. So we have to give them more extended learning opportunities. We have to give them access to great teachers. And we have to have supplementary support programs to help them along that pathway to get them caught up and to keep them caught up on their pathway to graduation.
You alluded to a video that we all in the auditorium here saw prior to the start of this conversation, and it was pretty dramatic, even though it was done with stick figures, cartoon stick figures, that once these kids start out, and they start out on an uneven playing field, lower-income kids come to school not as prepared as upper-income children. And once they start out, the gap widens and widens and widens, particularly with regard to summer gaps in education, and it becomes impossible to catch up. Now, for many people in the audience, that might have been new information. Was it new information for you, Sherry?
No, not at all. In fact, our schools have been promoting summer programs. One of the things I would like to say, the Y Readers program we started and piloted last year with 24-hour students. And one of the things that that provides was 6 weeks of additional instruction. Even though the students didn't know they were having fun and learning at the same time, the way it was structured, they have literacy opportunities in the morning, and then they have opportunities to experience the Y enrichment in the afternoons. So that was 6 weeks that of additional instruction in literacy for some students who, as the video alluded to, would not maybe have those literacy experiences. We also have other elementary schools in our district that have summer programs, but they were shorter because of funds.
But is it news to legislators, for instance, the people who provide the money for all this, taxpayers, people who are not necessarily parents but who have to pay taxes to support public education? Is it news to them that once the gap begins, it's going to get wider and wider and wider? Lori?
I think certainly our legislators have recognized the importance of the summer programs as evidenced in the Read to Achieve program, and will be providing students with those opportunities and experiences to help shore up their skills and to try to continue to move them forward. I think parents, depending, as Dr. Morrison said, on their school experiences, their poverty level, their reading comfort level as well, may realize the importance of the summer experience and may not. Certainly, parents are always doing everything they can to support their students and working as good partners with us in schools. But in our district, we have really tried to continue to engage our parents as we've provided various summer programs throughout our schools, also partnered with the Y through a Y Readers program, as well as with other community agencies to give our kids the time and the exposure to varieties of literature. We've also opened our media centers at various points in time during the summer, so students and parents and families can come in and take advantage of checking out books, using the computer, playing technology games on the computer, so they're learning and they're reading and they're also having fun.
But all of that's voluntary. You don't have to do it. You have to go to school because the state tells you you have to go to school. Does it help enough to have volunteer programs, Crystal Hill?
We don't think so. With the programs that the Y Reader offers, we've also been able to offer an additional program at one of our elementary schools. We're able to serve 80 students through that program and 48 students through our Y Reader program. But one of the things that we're doing is strategically identifying students that we see as at risk for academic failure, identifying those students early, and working very closely with the families to encourage their participation. We're moving forward with our school board to talk about making some of these summer programs mandatory, especially with the new law prior to third grade, because clearly at third grade it's too late.
I mentioned in the beginning of the program that it is people who are in favor of holding third graders back if they can't read to grade level think it's a good idea, because why socially promote kids who are not ready to go to the fourth grade? And if it gets worse and worse, they just feel worse and worse about themselves and worse about going to school. What happens to a kid who is held back? How do you maintain their self-esteem when their peers are being promoted?
Well, the research is clear that when students are retained, their chances for graduation drop dramatically. So it's just really interesting that the new law is asking us to retain students in third grade when they're not proficient.
Mike, may I add also that we believe that early intervention is critical.
Mm-hmm.
So before they get to third grade, we think that is very important to look at what we're doing before then. And then, and if retention is necessary, or if we think that they would benefit from another year, maybe in kindergarten or first grade, trying to catch that at the early ages. versus waiting till the end of third grade.
I don't know how long all of you have been at your various school system jobs and positions, but I do know how long Heath Morrison has been at his. It's only been a year.
1 year anniversary.
That's right.
It's all good.
It's only been a year, so I'm gonna. I feel safe in asking you a question like this, and that is, how could we at CMS have been promoting kids who can't read through the grades? Because I hear anecdotal stories of kids who graduate from college, from high school rather, who cannot read. How can this be possible? Who is responsible for this?
Well, let's be clear on a couple of things. There is a difference in terms of at what level you read. Are you reading with fluency or are you reading with comprehension? I think there you have to understand the complexity of reading and making sure that you're reading at grade level and that you're reading as a critical thinker and reader. I think in terms of the question about how does someone get promoted, usually what happens is that in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools, as I'm sure my colleagues will also attest to, schools make that decision. They look at the individual needs of the student. They have to ask a very difficult question. Is it better to promote the student into the next grade with support, or do we hold the student back? Many times the answer is to hold the student back and continue that same grade level with more instruction, more support. Other times it is to promote them into the next grade, however, to give them additional support to try to catch them up, do extended learning opportunities before school, after school. Again, we talk about in education differentiation of instruction. There's also differentiation of support. So you have to match the appropriate support to the needs of the student.
So now you have a mandate. The mandate starts this school year that if a child can't read by the end of third grade, you will, at grade level, you will have to hold that person back. What are the school systems doing that they didn't do before? What programs will be in place that weren't in place before to help these kids make it through? Let's start with Gaston County and Lori Morrow.
We will continue to utilize the balanced literacy framework as we teach reading for all of our students.
And what
which
is that?
That allows teachers to provide and use a variety of reading strategies, whether it's working with students in a small group, whether it's incorporating writing throughout the reading process, whether it's sharing reading aloud with students. And we use that framework and will continue to utilize that framework. One of the things we're doing differently is we have additional support teachers in place called literacy teachers in Gaston County, and we have ensured that those teachers are highly trained in the instruction of reading, that they have credible student achievement data behind them, that they have been able in their history to move students along as they work through the continuum of the grade levels, and they'll be working and pulling students in small groups and pushing into the classrooms, providing different guided reading lessons with them, going through some different phonics activities with them, as well as helping them with their writing skills. And so we feel that that's going to be helping us take a step in the right direction by providing additional support to our struggling readers. And we'll be doing that not just for third grade, but kindergarten through third grade.
Okay, and those are full-fledged teachers,
those
not teacher assistants.
Those are full-fledged teachers, yes.
I'll come
licensed
back and,
teachers.
I'll come back and I will get answers about what's going to be happening in Lincoln County Schools, in Mooresville, and at CMS when we come back from the break. We have to take one now, however, so we'll do it. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
More of our special Charlotte Talks conversation from last night in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. If you'd like to watch the short video that was discussed during the show, go to our website, wfae.org/charlottetalks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas, blood supplier to 21 of the region's hospitals. Local donors help meet blood needs as the summer supply drops and demand increases. cbcc.us. Monday on Charlotte Talks, it's been a long legislative session in Raleigh with lawmakers covering a lot of ground, making new laws, reversing direction on policy, getting getting involved with Charlotte's airport. Moral Monday protests brought the state national attention, and some have been surprised by Governor McCrory's less than moderate approach. We gather a panel of pundits to look at some of the accomplishments of this legislature and a few of the budget items that have raised eyebrows. That's when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President Obama takes his new economic message on the road. The Senate passes a student loan bill, and New York City mayoral candidate Anthony Weiner faces another sexting scandal.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning after Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Read to Achieve and the situation in the public schools beginning this school year in which third graders not able to read at or above grade level will be held back. It's a new state mandate. We'll get into other topics as well as we go through the hour with Lori Morrow, who is Deputy Superintendent of Gaston County Schools, Sherry Hoyle, Superintendent of Lincoln County Schools, Crystal Hill, Executive Director of the Elementary Education at Mooresville Graded Schools, and Heath Morrison, all doctors, by the way, Superintendent of CMS. I asked just before the break what the school systems will be doing in order to help kids that wasn't being done before, so because this new mandate requires that you hold them back. So what are you going to do in Lincoln County that you didn't do before to help these kids achieve?
Well, one of the things, Mike, we started implementing last year was guided reading and more intense in terms of, and that small group instruction based on that student's individual reading level. Also, flex clustering, looking at the organization of the school day and how we, based on whatever the student need is, may sending them out to different teachers for that specific need. And then what we would do is assess them, see what their progress is, and then regroup based on those needs. So what we're doing is fine-tuning what we've already put in place within the last several years.
And what about Mooresville?
Well, what we've been doing in Mooresville has been working. We've seen tremendous gains. In our third grade, we're about 89% proficient in reading. So the things that we've been doing have been working. We will continue to fine-tune those things, provide additional opportunities for extended day, and continue with our summer programs.
And at CMS?
I think much of the same. We have balanced literacy initiatives. We have guided reading practices, literacy coaches, before school programs, after school programs. But one of the things we're also trying to do is to create this culture with our students that it is very cool to read. We have partnerships with numerous governmental agencies, community agencies. The Charlotte Bobcats now have a literacy bus. We had some of the Bobcats come visit one of our elementary schools. Again, trying to create this community of learners and readers. I think people need to understand, to move one reading level, a student needs to read about approximately 40 books. And so some students, as we've already talked about, who already start off behind, we have to have them reading multiple books throughout the year. So there is really no substitute for becoming a better reader other than to read and read a lot.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This is all coming because reading has to be standardized because of Common Core standards. Is that correct?
I think, you know, I'm fairly old school on this. Common Core, I'm a big fan, big supporter, but I'm also a big fan of the three R's and reading, writing, and arithmetic.
But, I mean, technically, legally, we have to...
Look, if we're not getting kids to graduate and if they're not proficient readers, then we're not doing our job. So Common Core is a aspect of this accountability, but I think it's really the importance of stressing reading.
Okay, but the Common Core exists because the federal government has mandated it. Is that correct?
That's not correct.
That's not correct.
That's not correct.
No.
Common Core exists because?
Common Core exists because a group of governors and chief state school counselors came together and recognized that there was a need across our country for our students to improve their skills in reading and in math. And in 2010, our state board adopted the Common Core standards for North Carolina, which include reading and math. And we are implementing, finished our first year this past year across the state of North Carolina, implementing the standards.
So there are standards in the Common Core for teaching?
There are standards for learning.
For learning. So the Read to Achieve that we've been talking about here has been mandated by this new law that takes effect this school year, put forth by the General
Assembly.
Pardon me?
State law.
State law, exactly. But what I'm hearing you say is that all of you have different ways of doing what you're about to have to do. There's no standardized way throughout the state of North Carolina to get kids up to reading level by the end of third grade. You're all doing it slightly differently. Is that not true?
Well, there are some things that have been put into place by the State Board of Education, such as using a Reading 3D with grades K-3, which is a formative assessment. So all schools in North Carolina are required to use that. It's a formative assessment that choose to drive your instruction.
Formative assessment is a test?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. It's a reading assessment that looks at the different levels of reading. The five areas of reading, comprehension, fluency, phonemic awareness.
What are the implications of all this? In other words, if you aren't successful at the end of this school year, are we going to have enormous third grade classes next school year?
Well, one thing that I think is really interesting, and, you know, I just want to say again that Common Core and Read to Achieve have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Completely separate legislatures, people who are doing things for education, two completely different things. But to answer your question, which was, I'm sorry, I forgot.
So have I. No, what are the implications?
Okay. We are going to be very successful. I apologize. But one thing that's really interesting is we talked about moving to new state standards, and this law, of course, goes into effect. Well, we took a new test this year with new standards. And so every 5 years, the curriculum changes in North Carolina, and every year we see a drop when the curriculum changes. So it's really interesting that this legislature is going into effect right when our students are going to be taking this new test for the second year, which we won't get results until October. So we won't really know if what we did last year was effective until October, when almost one-fourth of the school year is over. And then we have to look at our students at the end of third grade and see if they're proficient on the test.
Can we talk about something else that's interesting, though? Just, I think we all own, and I mean we all, being our community, our state, our nation, our students being great readers, curious readers. That's important in terms of education. It's in terms of workforce development. And we all own accountability for it. And I applaud our state legislature last year for passing this law. I think we all want to be accountable. But you can't just pass a law and then say, hope it works out. Right. So once we get students, remember, you know, what the data says, before we ever start with a student in public education or public charter schools or even private education, what the research shows whether or not a student's going to be successful. So once we get a student, the best lever that we have for getting a student to be a great reader or great in numeracy is quality teacher. And in the budget that just passed, once again, we have not compensated teachers. So now our teachers in North Carolina are going to rank 48th out of 50. 10 years, we have fallen from about 28th to now 51st in the country in terms of teacher salary. So our ability to put great teachers in front of our students is questionable. Also, we want to personalize the learning experience for our students. And we've just cut over $120 million worth of teacher assistance. So being able to differentiate, as that video talked about, trying to get students who are behind caught up, that becomes very much in question. We've just cut instructional materials. And so we all want the accountability, but we all have to be accountable if we ultimately want our students to be successful.
I was going to get to this later, but you have called a lot of what's going on with the legislature, particularly with the budget cuts, hugely troubling. Those were your words, Dr. Morrison. And this Read to Achieve mandate came out of a law called Excellent Public Schools. Are excellent public schools really the goal here?
I think the greater goal is graduation and increasing graduation rates so our students can be successful, contributing members to our community, to our state, so they can go to college, so they can become ready for a career and or the workforce.
I know it's difficult because you are public employees to answer this question honestly, but perhaps you didn't hear the question. And we will disguise your voices so that they will not know in Raleigh who you are. But is that the goal? Is excellent public schools the goal? Are they talking out of both sides of their mouths in Raleigh? Are they making mandates for excellence more difficult or impossible to achieve by doing what they're doing with the budget?
I always try to take people at their intent, and I've had many conversations with legislators, and I do believe that most of the legislation that has passed, folks want it to be good legislation. But I have a standard for legislation. What's the problem you're trying to solve, and is the legislation that you've passed actually going to solve the problem? Again, there's nothing that I have an issue with as an educator, as a lead teacher in our district around the READ to Achieve initiative. It's the right initiative. Our students reading at grade level. But my request to our lawmakers, to our policymakers, to those that fund us, is that you give us the tools to be able to accomplish that which you passed into law. And the best lever that I have to change lives, see, you said, you made a statement, and I disagreed with it a little bit at the beginning, because that video didn't say it was impossible to get a student caught up. But the best lever we have to have a student who was behind caught up and succeed and get ahead is a quality teacher, supported by teacher assistants with the necessary supports. And if you cut those things, you can't just raise the accountability and lower the resources. And I think that's not fair and that's not right.
Does anybody have anything to add to that? Because that, I'm going to circle back around to that same question that I just asked. Some believe that these moves to demand more of schools and teachers and administrators while giving them a lot less money and making $10 million available for school vouchers to pull kids out of public schools and give them a choice to go to private schools may actually be, in fact, a deliberate attempt to weaken public education while making school choice more available and more appealing, because a lot of these people evidently don't like public education. What's your take on that?
My personal feeling is that clearly there is an attack on public education. I am a strong believer in public education. I believe it's a foundation to our society. And I do believe that the educators in North Carolina will continue to do what's best for children, regardless of what happens in Raleigh.
I also agree. I'm a strong proponent, obviously, of public education, a product of public education. We continue to see our teachers and our administrators do more with less, but we're at the breaking point. We're at the point where we can't continue to keep asking them to do additional responsibilities, have additional levels of accountability without providing them the tools and the resources that they need. And I hope that everyone in Raleigh will understand and realize that. I think if they were to spend some time in our schools, they would be able to look into the eyes of our teachers and see and feel the frustration, but yet they still come to work every day and they work as hard as they can because everyone is here for the students and our main goal is for them to be successful.
Can we talk about one other aspect of the voucher? And I find it interesting that we hear that we are asked to live within our means and that there are reasons why we had to cut teacher assistants, not be able to give raises to our teachers, and yet somehow we find $50 million for vouchers. I don't know how that is living within our means. Now, the other thing I'm interested in, as said yesterday, as a superintendent, as a parent, and as a taxpayer in North Carolina, is if we passed READ to Achieve for accountability, we also, in the Excellence of Schools Act, are going to grade schools A, B, C, D, F, because the taxpayers deserve to know how public dollars are being spent, then why are we exempting private schools who will be accepting vouchers from being graded the same way so that we know our tax dollars are being spent well? Why is there a difference between public dollars being spent in public education and public dollars being spent in private education? As a taxpayer, I would like to know that.
You told WFAE News, Dr. Morrison, in the aftermath of the budget particulars being announced that you said, so we're not giving you any more money. We're going to take away something that's important to you. We're talking about teachers here. And by the way, something that makes your job manageable and allows you to teach kids at the level you want to, teacher assistants. We're going to cut that across the state. You're not the only person who has echoed concerns or said had concerns about all of this. And you mentioned that we are, what, falling from 47th to 48th or 50th in education?
MECED has recently come across data that shows that over the last 10 years, no state has fallen further in teacher salaries than North Carolina. We have fallen over 15% in teacher salaries. Our teacher salaries are now $10,000 below the national average. And so how do we get great teachers to come to North Carolina and stay in North Carolina when our salary difference is at that level?
And they've gone to a pay-for-performance, if I'm not mistaken about this, kind of compensation situation. They've eliminated teacher tenure, or they will be eliminating it. And the bonuses for a good performing teacher are not going to be paid this year. So I ask you this question. Is North Carolina a good place to teach? If you were 21 years old and graduating from college today and wanted to be a teacher, would you come here?
Well, I'll say
the audience won't.
I'll just say that our superintendent, Dr. Mark Edwards, his daughter just finished graduate school, went back to school, decided she wanted to be a teacher. And she decided to go to Tennessee because she will be making about $11,000 more as a beginning teacher than she would starting here.
On the one hand, go ahead.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Also in our district, traveled South Carolina. We have several teachers we have lost this year because for the next school year, they will be making $10,000 more.
In South Carolina.
In South Carolina.
Wow. Now,
we're still above Mississippi.
I
think.
There's one good thing.
I don't know whether, you know, Charlotte has these gleaming skyscrapers and it has things to do for young people and it's an exciting place to live. You may not be as fortunate in that regard in Lincoln County or Gaston County, although you're close to us so people can come in. But it costs a lot to live in Charlotte. It costs less to live in Lincoln County and Gaston County. Is it easier for you to attract good teachers than it is for Dr. Morrison to attract them?
Our challenge is, I think, in terms of our eastern end, is Denver area, Lake Norman. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, we steal some of his teachers.
We steal them right back from you, too.
So does Mooresville. They've stolen one. I just had them on the air with me.
We have, in certain areas, such as the sciences, exceptional children, there are certain areas that we have problems in terms of getting applications in the district. Elementary, we fare well. Middle school, again, in those content areas, there's some challenges for science teachers, math teachers.
What about in Gaston County?
We also, like Lincoln and Mooresville and CMS, trade teachers back and forth, whether it's for salary reasons or whether it's for relocation reasons. Mm-hmm. But what has been difficult for us is the pressing need that we have to attract science teachers and to attract foreign language teachers. We're fortunate that we do. Our county lines go up and align with Mecklenburg, and we're able to attract teachers in the lower part of the county. But as we move forward, it becomes greater and greater as you get out into the rural parts of the community.
CMS gets money from the state. It gets money from the county, from Mecklenburg County. Do Gaston and Lincoln County and what county? I'm sorry, Iredell County.
Mooresville.
Does the city of Mooresville supplement state money?
Yes, we get money from the county, Iredell County, the state, and then our school board also.
Is the same true in Lincoln and Gaston very quickly?
Our county commissioners allotted us dollars this year, but it goes toward mandated expenses versus personnel.
And what
we
about,
also receive county and state funding, yes.
Okay. When I come back, I want to find out if this will cushion the blow somewhat from these cuts that are coming from the state. But we have to take a break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
We'll have more of our special Charlotte Talks conversation from last night in just a moment here on 90.7 WFAE. Because this was a recorded conversation, we won't be able to take your phone calls this hour. If you'd like to watch the short video that was discussed during the show, just go to our website, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and the Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and garage door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com. Coming up at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the Friday News Roundup. In the first hour, Diane and a panel of journalists will cover the week's top national news stories. President Barack Obama takes his new economic message on the road, the U.S. Senate passes a student loan bill, and New York City mayoral candidate Anthony Weiner faces another sexting scandal. The Diane Rehm Show this morning at 10 on 90.7 WFAE.
Big day at the job, They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Saturdays at 8 p.m. or Fridays at 10 p.m. on WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
We're back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, and we're talking about education in North Carolina and the impact of recent decisions by the state legislature, both in terms of money and in terms of Read to Achieve, which mandates that children who cannot read at or above grade level by third grade will be held back beginning this school year. And we're doing so with Dr. Heath Morrison, who is superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, Dr. Laurie Morrow, deputy superintendent of Gaston County Schools, Dr. Sherry Hoyle, superintendent of Lincoln County Schools, and Dr. Crystal Hill, Executive Director of Elementary Education at Mooresville Graded Schools. So the state's cut a lot of money, and I'm going to talk a little bit about in a second about the number of teacher assistants, for instance, that have been cut from the program because of these budget cuts. Will enough of it be made up by an increase in county funding from Mecklenburg, from Cabarrus, from Gaston, from Lincoln, and from the city of Mooresville, to soften the blow, to cushion the blow?
We are currently working with our county commissioners in Gaston to establish our budget, and we're working with them to help them recognize the needs that we have within our classrooms with regards to teacher assistants and teachers.
The budget for this coming school year?
Yes.
Ours, in working with our county commissioners, our requests were more paying the light bill, having dollars for that because we've been cut over time. So our local dollars will not be put into personnel.
I don't need to get answers from everybody on that question, but because it just brought it to mind that the budget process, it seems to me, we've talked about this before, is backwards in North Carolina. You're starting this school year and you've just gotten notice from the legislature that they're cutting all this money and you're going to lose all these teacher assistants and you're about to start school. In fact, Charlotte Mecklenburg has started school because the year-round schools have begun.
Indeed, we was visiting two of our just started this year-round schools. And I want to thank a legislature because last year they allowed us to do a pilot with our Project Lift schools where they gave us the flexibility to have year-round school. And so at four of our schools this year, we are implementing year-round school, at two of the schools adding 20 days, at two of the other schools just doing different calendar days to reduce that loss of summer learning. And so we're excited about that, and we think that's going to make a tremendous difference.
But shouldn't the budget process be changed somehow? This happens every single year. You can't plan.
I think absolutely it would make a lot more sense in terms of good budgeting and efficient use of taxpayer dollars for us to know what our funding is going to be from the state first, and then we could make a reasonable request to our county commissioners. And I want to thank our county commissioners. We did get an increase this year, but it really covered growth and sustaining. We had 3,000 students more last year. We have another 3,000 student increase this year. So it's barely covering the cost of additional students. And on top of that, one other area, we also all get funding from the federal government as well. About 10% of our budget is federal funding. Unfortunately, that's also being reduced as well, and especially in areas that support those students most impacted by poverty.
Charlotte-Mecklenburg is the biggest system up here on the stage, but these figures, I believe, just came out this morning from the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction. You were planning on having 6,952 classroom teachers this year in Mecklenburg County, but with the funding cuts, you're going to have 6,457. That's a cut of 495 positions going into a school year that is about to start. In Lincoln County, a smaller system, but you were expecting 554.5, I don't know how that happened, classroom teachers, and you're going to get 513.5, which means a cut of 41. And I'm sure there are similar impacts not only in teaching positions, but in teacher assistant positions in the four systems up here on the stage. What impact is this going to have? Gaston County.
As we have looked at our teacher allotments and done our initial planning, we are going to see some gradual increases in class size. We are hoping that as we continue to work with the county and secure local dollars, we'll be able to come back and lower those class sizes with additional teachers. But as we look at our state allotment, our class sizes have risen on average 2 students.
What about Lincoln County?
Similar. We will be increasing class sizes. However, this immediate school year, we will not be losing any positions. What we have done, we were able to cover any losses through retirements and attrition, mm-hmm. which, again, still impacts. We don't replace those positions, so that does increase our class size.
And in Mooresville?
Similar effect. We don't plan on losing any positions, but class sizes will be rising in grades 4-6. The new normal will be 30-32.
Okay. And in Charlotte-Mecklenburg?
We've tried to be planful and be ready for these level of cuts. And so we looked at our local dollars or federal dollars, trying to make sure we keep reasonable class sizes. The thing right now I'm most concerned about is the teacher assistants, over 400 teacher assistant positions. And we'll be having fewer teacher assistants, but also they'll be working fewer hours and fewer days. And so that's very troubling because these are some of the most best return on investments that we have in the entire state. And we're going to be losing them, and it's just very very impactful to our
state. And how will that impact Reed to achieve the loss of these teacher assistants?
I think it makes it more challenging. It gets back to the point I had before. I applaud the piece of legislation. I understand why our legislature wanted to do it. But then to turn around in the next budget cycle and take away some of the best ability that we have to get our students to be reading at grade level makes it challenging to match this piece of legislation with this budget.
Let's say that you're all successful at Read to Achieve and that you start turning out third graders who can read at or above grade level across the board. What happens in the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grades? Because there can be some backsliding, can there not? Just because they make it to the third grade and can read at grade level doesn't mean they'll be at grade level in seventh grade, does it?
Well, we certainly have interventions in place as we look at working with our students kindergarten through 12th grade to try to prevent those backslides, as you called it, certainly as they receive additional supports, as we look at extended learning time, whether it's before school, after school, whether it's during the summer.
Lincoln County?
Ours is similar. We also have during-the-day tutoring all the way through those grades you mentioned. Also, I'd like to address some of our churches, our faith-based community, and also other community organizations that all are helping sponsor some after-school programs. And we have a Communities in School program at our middle school, which is an after-school program that also provides opportunities for our middle schoolers.
What about in Mooresville?
In Mooresville, we have a laser focus on results and continuous improvement. So we're continuously looking at every single student and how they're performing. Also in Mooresville, we're fortunate to have a one-to-one initiative where every student in grades 3 through 12th grade have a laptop computer, and that has allowed us to really differentiate instruction and really personalize learning for our students.
And at CMS, what happens in the 4th through 12th grades?
Well, it's about graduation starts in kindergarten and pre-K, so you've got to be vigilant about this all the time. But it's about getting our students not just to be able to read, but be able to read at a college and career-ready level. And so we look at this in a multi-level approach. We try to differentiate the instruction and provide individual support for every student who starts to fall behind. But the biggest issue about why students start to fall behind again was articulated in the video that we had a chance to see before this presentation started. And so I think it's worth coming back to that, because what research tells us is that students who are in poverty will lose half of what they learned during the summer months. So as all of us are told to run our school districts like a business, I have a business proposition for the state of North Carolina. And I have a way for all of us to raise achievement, get readers that we all dream about, and it won't cost the state a dime or a penny. And simply give us what businesses have the ability to do, which is to set your own hours of operation. Let us set calendars for our schools of high poverty so that we can reduce that loss of summer learning, and we will see achievement like we haven't seen, closing the gaps that we want to see, and readers at the level that we are speaking to and Read to Achieve. Now, that won't cost the state anything. We're starting to see the ability to do that in some of our schools in CMS at Project Lift. My question is, why would we not do that for all of our schools in North Carolina?
Are you getting pushback from the legislature on that?
There's pushback from many entities because there's a concern that if we were to set different calendars during the summer, it may impact tourism.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes a question of what are we going to prioritize in our state? And no one wants to hurt tourism. Most of the students that we would be serving during the summer are not going to be impacting the tourism industry. So let's all come together. We all want the same things, and let's figure out reasonably how to accomplish them. But again, if you want me to run my school district like a business, and I don't have a problem with that, let me do what you let a business do and set my hours of operation. And my hours of operation would not be to give 3 months off, where my students who come to us in poverty, and over half of our students in CMS come that way, are going to lose half of what they learned the year before. That's not good business sense, and it's not good educational sense.
Doctor, go ahead.
And won't cost the taxpayers a dime.
Dr. Hill from Mooresville, you've been nodding vigorously in agreement.
I do agree with them, just allowing us the freedom and flexibility to do what's best for students. It appears that the priorities are not always education when we look at our legislature.
Now, we all know that reading is fundamental, but what about math and reasoning skills and other things that go into a well-rounded, well-educated person? If we're all concentrating on reading in the first to third grade, are those other things going to get short shrift, or are we going to keep up with those things as well? We begin with you, Lori Morrow.
Certainly, we will continue to focus on math, continue to focus on science and social studies at the elementary level. We have taken the integrated approach in Gaston County, so we are not only teaching reading through using texts that might address a weather unit, or we might be looking at math problems that require some additional journaling as students are writing about their answers. So we are trying to integrate and intertwine all of the subjects together as we work to ensure our students are successful.
And Dr. Sherry Hoyle up in
Generally
Lincoln County.
The same. We are also doing integrated units just because maximizing time, and also the world is not necessarily in silos, so that integrated, when we solve problems, we're reading, we're thinking, so giving them those experiences.
I'm glad you brought up silos. I was going to ask you about this because we have all these ideas floating around and a lot of freedom to achieve what the legislature wants you to achieve or try to achieve, and everybody has ideas. How, do you all talk to each other, or are you operating in silos? Do you share? Do you exchange? I know you share teachers, evidently, but do you exchange ideas? Do you find out who's doing what and what's working, what's not working? How does that work?
We have multi-level meetings. In fact, we have a superintendent's council where we meet monthly and have the opportunity to talk with other superintendents in the region, find out what they're doing. Also, individuals in the assistant superintendent roles or deputy superintendent curriculum instructions have those opportunities, as well as our directors and also our transportation and human resources. So there are we call them job-alike groups in our region, and they meet regularly.
Can you name something, Dr. Morrow, that you've stolen from CMS or from Lincoln County or from Mooresville, or that they've stolen from you? Or not stolen, but, you know, borrowed, appropriated.
Yes, certainly as we were fortunate to visit Mooresville graded about 4 years ago, and when we had the opportunity to look at turnaround strategy for one of our elementaries, we implemented the one-to-one computing device strategy at the 3-5 level in order to provide our students various learning options. Mm-hmm. And we learned that and saw that that experience from Mooresville graded.
Other states have, I believe, implemented programs like Read to Achieve. Are there any figures on success or failure rates in those other states' programs?
I think most of this is originating in Florida. And under Governor then Jeb Bush, mm-hmm. There were a number of reforms that were passed, including reading by grade 3. It was accompanied by a huge investment in early childhood, full-day kindergarten, more pre-K. So the expectation is we're going to raise the level of accountability, but we're going to raise the support to help you be successful. And so you can't just look at it in isolation and say, well, how did the third grade scores do? You have to look at everything that was done. But there are states where there has been some success with this piece of legislation, and we need to now all work together, superintendents, teachers, communities, community partners like the Y, and our legislature to come together and make it successful here in North Carolina.
Let's talk about a group of people we have not mentioned yet. We've mentioned teachers, we've mentioned legislators, we've mentioned you guys. We have not talked about parents. And in every conversation that I've ever had on education, it comes down to the parents. So what can parents do, particularly if they themselves struggled through school, to help their kids not struggle, be able to read by third grade? What can they do?
We created an Office of Parent and Family Engagement this past year. We have a parent university where we're reshaping the focus to make sure that we're reaching out to our parents to get them to understand. We want parent advocates. There's that clothing commercial, I think, an educated consumer is our best customer. We want our parents to be educated consumers. We need to work with our parents to help them help us, and ultimately all of us working together to help their child. So one of the things that we know will make a difference is if the parent reads to the student at night. We stress reading during the day. When the student goes home, we need them to continue to read. If a parent's struggling to read themselves, then we need to help that parent gain some literacy skills as well so that they can help their child. It doesn't do us any good to send literacy materials home, books, in English if the parent's primary language is not English. So we need to match the need of the parent so they can help us meet the needs of the student.
Very quickly, one-word answer. Are you optimistic about Read to Achieve? Let's begin with you, Lori Morrow, Gaston
yes.
County. Optimistic. Yes. Sherry Hoyle, Lincoln County.
Yes.
Crystal Hill from Mooresville.
I'm optimistic about our children, not legislation.
Heath Morrison from CMS.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for being here. Thanks to Friendship Missionary Baptist Church for the hall. Thanks to the YMCA of Greater Charlotte for putting all this together with Teach for America. And MEC Ed, thank you all for being here, and thanks for listening.